Welcome to Simple Acts, Big Impact. I'm Natalie Silverstein. Each week, I'll introduce you to young people who are making a difference in their communities through nonprofits, social entrepreneurship, volunteerism, and activism. I hope you'll be inspired by these conversations, which prove that every person, no matter their age, can help to create a kinder world. I consider myself a lifelong learner, and my greatest teachers are the young changemakers I interview for this podcast. My guest, Aaron H. from California, created the Indigenous Justice Coalition to support the many Indigenous tribes in our country who have been denied their rights and benefits. He learned how to respond to grants, has raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, and visited Washington to lobby Congress. Aaron is a beautiful example of Dr. King's phrase, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." Welcome back, everyone. I'm super excited to introduce you to my new friend, Aaron. He is going to tell us all about this wonderful work he does with the Indigenous Justice Coalition. Hey, Aaron, thanks so much for being here.
Hello, I'm very excited to be here as well.
So tell us a little more about yourself, how old you are, where you go to school, where you live, what grade you're in, all that good stuff, and then start from the very beginning.
Yeah, so my name is Aaron. I'm currently a senior at Bellarmine College Prep. I live, which is a private all-boys Jesuit school in the Bay Area.
So tell us all about the Indigenous Justice Coalition. What is it all about?
Yeah, so the Indigenous Justice Coalition, it's an organization where our mission is remedying America's unrecognized tribe problem. And I originally got involved in this work around sophomore year of high school, where sophomore year of high school, I was doing a lot of research about different social issues in America through my school's policy debate team. And in my research, I found out that America actually had an unrecognized tribe problem. Basically, across America, over 400 tribes are not federally recognized by the government, which means that they are denied access from a lot of different benefits. For example, free UC education, cultural repositories such as the National Eagle Repository, repatriating their ancestors, over $31 billion of tribal aid only to federally recognized tribes. And there's a lot of benefits that they do not have because of an issue in 1978 where the Bureau of Indian Affairs, where they left out over 400 tribes from the list of federally recognized tribes. And this problem is actually especially apparent in California, because in California, a long time ago, in around 1927, Superintendent Lafayette A. Dorrington, he struck off 135 tribes off federal land rolls, which means now they aren't like recognized by the government. And he did this illegally because he didn't want to purchase land for them, which would have cost a lot of money. At school, I never learned about this. So it was like really, really shocking. At most in the past, I learned about the previous treaties that the government had violated, but I never knew that this issue continued into modern day and was happening on my homeland, if not even worse now. So after that, I sort of felt a call to action. At my school, Bellarmine, it preaches like a Jesuit mission of men and women for and with others. And I felt like this was a really big instance where I had to stand by that mission. So I did some research online and I found that the Mwek Maloney tribe of the San Francisco Bay Area, they'd actually been fighting for federal recognition for the past 40 years. And it got so bad that the chairwoman of the tribe, Charlene Nijmeh, she was running for Congress because she thought their current congressional representatives weren't listening to her demands. So at the time, I was also very interested in politics. So I decided to join along, great volunteer experience. And then while I was volunteering with them, I learned more about their issue. I learned more about the stories that the chairwoman had gone in the fight for federal recognition. And through my volunteering experience there, I really believed that this was like a meaningful cause that I had to fight for because it was on my homeland as well. So ever since then, although she lost in the initial primary, we decided to redirect our focus toward reaching out to currently elected officials. And we started helping out the tribe in other areas as well. For example, we started grant writing for the tribe, where we secured over $500,000 of funding for them, which was really impactful for them. So, and then after that, we realized that it didn't just need to be our school, Bellarmine. We had a lot of friends at other schools who wanted to get involved, so we helped them set up chapters at their schools as well. Where now I think we have around 35 chapters across 10 states, not just helping out the Mwek Maloney tribe, but partnerships with other tribes as well. And the reason why I thought it was important that someone like me of non-Indigenous descent, my two parents immigrated from China, to get involved in this Indigenous advocacy work is because I really believe if you can take away the rights of one community, you can take away the rights of all. Like, if we just let the government take away the rights of Indigenous communities and I didn't advocate for it because I wasn't Indigenous, then who would, and others adopted that same mindset, then who would stand up for the Mwakamoni tribe? And the government maybe targeted my community tomorrow, and others adopted that same mindset of only advocating in our own communities, then would anyone stand up for me? So that's why I thought morally it was important that I had an obligation to get involved. And then on a strategic advocacy level standpoint, I think in today's like polarized and gridlock society where Congress can barely pass like a budget bill, it's honestly very hard to pass any policies. And the way that we can convince Congress to like listen to the citizens is if communities across all different backgrounds comes together and advocates for an issue. So obviously if the Mwakamoni tribe, if they only advocated for themselves, Congress would first think that they don't represent the big voter base. And second, they are a self-interested group. But if communities from all different backgrounds of non-Indigenous descent advocates for the Mwakamoni tribe, then Congress now sees that the entire voter base is supporting this, and not just the Mwakamoni tribe. So they have an obligation to listen, which is why I think from a strategic advocacy level standpoint, it was important that I get involved with the Mwakamoni tribe's fight for federal recognition. And that has sort of been my story throughout high school.
Wow, Aaron, this is just amazing. So tell me a little bit more specifically about the work that you do. You mentioned the grant writing, $500,000 grant. That is incredible. That's real money, as they say. That really does move the needle. So what are the other activities of the coalition? And then how do you have volunteers, and how big is it, and all of that good stuff?
Yeah, so I think there are three main areas of the Indigenous Justice Coalition. First is legislative affairs. Legislative affairs is basically political advocacy, trying to convince Congress to pass legislation that reaffirms the Mwakamoni tribe's federal recognition. So the way that we have been going about legislative affairs is we have been doing it on three different fronts. First is the city level, second is the state level, and finally is the federal level. On the city level, we've been advocating at a bunch of city councils, and we've been trying to secure resolutions of support from the city council saying that, hey, Congress, you have to pass this legislation reaffirming the Mwakamoni tribe. And we've gotten, I think, resolutions of support from Union City, Livermore, and Richmond is in progress right now. So those are the two cities, or those are the cities that we have been like talking to, and we've been reaching out to almost every single city across the Bay Area in the Aboriginal territory of the Mwakamoni tribe. Second is the state level. The state level, we've not just been working with the Mwakamoni tribe, but we've been working with the Coalition of California State Tribes to include provisions in this bill called AB 52 that recognizes unrecognized tribes' right to consultation in land. Basically what that means is like once a developer develops on land, they have to consult not just like the federally recognized tribes, but also the unrecognized tribes in California as well. And we've been helping reach out to state assembly members and state senators to include this provision. And finally, on the congressional level, we've been reaching out to congressional representatives, scheduling meetings with them, seeing if they would be able to co-sponsor or maybe even sponsor the bill, introduce the bill into Congress, where they would reaffirm the Mwakamoni tribe's fight for federal recognition. And the reason why I think the city level is important on this level is because Congress, they need to see that the voters care. And if it's a bunch of cities banding together, that's how Congress is basically going to see that the voters have to care. So those are the three main areas of legislative affairs. Then on the second level is finance. Finance, its main mission is to basically redirect or redistribute like resources and get the Mwakamoni tribe and other tribes that we've been writing grants for, the resources that they've been excluded of because they don't have like federal recognition. So for the Mwakamoni tribe, I found out that like they act or like Indigenous communities across America, they like face much worse air quality issues because they live in more urbanized communities where they've been gentrified to. After finding out about that, I did like a lot of research online and found different grant opportunities. And the first grant we applied for was this $500,000 California Air Resources Board grant. In this grant, we formed a partnership with a local environmental company, Climate Clean. We secured a bunch of letters of support from city governments that we'd spoken to in the past. And we are able to secure that $500,000 grant, which is awesome. It basically funds like a air quality monitoring app, and it installs air sensors in tribal members' homes to give them air quality recommendations so it can improve overall like air quality in the house. Then we also wrote some other grants, for example, a $10,000 Indian Lanterner Foundation grant. In this grant, basically, the tribe needed a lot of funding for like horse care because they have 17 horses and they also need people to take care of those horses. So that grant was funding both of those. And then finally, we helped, this is kind of small, but we secured a $1,000 Awesome Foundation grant where we are helping start education at local schools and our local chapters as well. So that's mainly the finance side. And we've also been writing grants for like the Coalition of California State Tribes. And we wrote a grant for, I think, the Lakota Sioux all the way in South Dakota. And finally, I think is basically, finally, the last part of IJC or Indigenous Justice Coalition is student engagement. In student engagement, we basically try to launch like educational initiatives and really immerse students in like Indigenous advocacy so that they really understand what's going on. So in student engagement, this is also tied to legislative affairs, but this past summer, we actually went to Washington, D.C., and we went to Capitol Hill to like lobby politicians. And I thought it was like really interesting because I didn't know the term like lobbying came from standing in the lobby.
Trying to talk. It means literally standing in the lobby.
Yeah, standing in the lobby. I was like, wow, that's actually really interesting. And then we also did a trip to Pine Ridge Reservation where we formed like a partnership with like a known local nonprofit to like teach educational workshops to these Pine Ridge kids when they didn't have many resources back home. And in that, we also tried to make sure the students really understood like the history of Indigenous people, and they went to like different cultural sites like Wounded Knee. Furthermore, we've been doing like a lot of educational initiatives at schools. At Bellarmine, for example, I helped organize like the first ever assembly about the Mwakmulni tribe at our school. We also like introduced like a lot of land acknowledgement practices to different schools. And we've just been trying to spread the message about the Mwakmulni tribe and just Indigenous communities across America. So that's basically the student engagement side. And like I said, at first it was just Bellarmine. It was Bellarmine Club, but now we've expanded it to schools across the nation, supporting tribes across the nation, where now we have around 35 chapters across the nation, over 10 states, and around 700 total members.
Amazing. 35 chapters. That's fantastic. Well, first of all, again, this is just so impressive. It's just the breadth of the work and your passion for it, again, is really, really incredible that you care so deeply, and you've gone really deep into the issues and the education around it, which again speaks to your heart for this and the fact that this is not from your own culture, but is something that you actually think we should all care about, which we absolutely should. I was reminded when you were talking about the educational piece that here in New York City and in other areas, you know, there's a lot of land recognition statements that might be made at the beginning of a theatrical show or at the beginning of a college graduation, but it feels kind of perfunctory, right? It doesn't feel meaningful. I don't know that people are listening. I love the educational piece. Obviously, the finance piece is so, so important. I was curious when you were talking about all of the grants that you've already successfully gotten, how did you learn how to respond to these grant applications?
Yeah. So like the grant applications are honestly like very long and stuff.
It's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very hard. You have to do like a lot of like IRS form, compiling these IRS forms. And then you have to secure a bunch of like letters of support, write a bunch of budgets. So I think like the part about our financing is it's obviously not just me. I can't do all of that work by myself. So at our school and at other schools, there was like a lot of different people interested in like finance. They want to maybe be an investment banker when they grow up. I'm not really sure what their future career aspirations are, but they had a lot of people interested in finance. So they were very interested in like this budget creating work. They're also interested in like application of finance to the real world, which is basically like grants, helping these nonprofits out or helping the Mwakmulni tribe and other tribes out. So we had a lot of members on our team write grants. I first had to learn it myself when I was like writing the grants. The environmental company helped us out a lot with like how to restructure grant applications and stuff like that. And I really learned in that initial grant application. So now I was able to write grants by myself, and I created a guide basically for other people to help write grants in our team so that they can like continue to work forward. So it's not just like the knowledge in me, right? I want to make sure it's sustainable for the future.
Absolutely. And having responded to grants myself and having read a million grants in my life, you know, if you've done it once and it's really hard, and there's a really large learning curve, right? But once you've done it and you've figured it out, if you can just help to spread that to other people, and there's a lot of cutting and pasting that can happen, right? You know, if you have your statements and you have your budgets and you know exactly what it is that you're asking for and why you're asking for it, a lot of that material, it's similar to applying to college, right? You can kind of cut and paste some of that into different grant applications, but the hardest one is the first one. And so the fact that you did all that and that you put together a resource guide for others to do it, folks in the chapters, like, that is just, that's just brilliant. Well, Aaron, this is like really, really impressive and incredible work. Can you tell everybody where they can learn more, follow, maybe start a chapter in their own school? I think this is such an amazing opportunity for someone to start a chapter and start doing this work in their own community.
Yeah. So there are, I think, three main ways. First is follow our Instagram page at Indigenous Justice Coalition. Our Instagram page has reels of all of our different advocacy initiatives when we went to Washington, D.C., when we went to different city councils, when we went to Pine Ridge. And then we have different educational materials on there as well of how to start a chapter. Second is our website. Our website also has like all of the information about our previous work and also how they can get involved by forming their own chapter and stuff like that. So our website is also indigenousjusticecoalition.com. And finally is our email. Sending out an email to us will reply really quickly, as you saw with this podcast, team@indigenousjusticecoalition.com. Once again, team@indigenousjusticecoalition.com. And then we'll get back to you real fast.
Aaron, I can't thank you enough for telling us this story. I'm just so, so impressed. I'm wishing you the best of luck. I don't think you need luck. I think you're going to do amazing, amazing things. Keep doing what you're doing. It's really, really important. Thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Yeah, thank you. It's my pleasure to be on this podcast as well.
Thanks for listening. If you are inspired by what you heard today and would like to support the creation of this podcast and the work of the changemaker I featured, please visit my website, simpleactsguide.com/podcast, to make a donation. And please follow, rate, and review the podcast to help us spread these positive messages.